25% of our annual budget comes from listeners like you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting CKUW 95.9 FM at Fundrive.
This is Olivia, and you're listening to Bikini Drive-In on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screening media studies, arts criticism, and women and gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning, listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. This week, I'm joined again by Sarah Atnikoff. Thanks so much for joining me again.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sarah Atnikoff is a freelance writer, executive director, and knowledge mobilizer living in Winnipeg. She has an ongoing project called Feminist Fonts that uses fonts to showcase the inner dialogue that helps to frame and break down patriarchal inequalities. You can see most of the things she's done at sarahatnikoff.com. Today, we're continuing Anthology Month and discussing the 2004 horror anthology film, Three Extremes.
Singularly terrifying vision of fear.
Extremes is an anthology of three horror shorts from China, South Korea, and Japan. In Dumplings, directed by Fruit Chan, an aging actress named Mrs. Lee wants to rejuvenate her youth and beauty to attract the attention of her husband, Lee, who was cheating on her with a younger woman. She buys dumplings from Aunt May, a mysterious seller who claims to be much older than she appears, thanks to her special dumplings. Mrs. Lee is horrified to discover the secret ingredient to May's dumplings, fetuses, preferably around the 5-month mark, of course. Of course, she's not appalled enough to stop eating them because it seems to work. The more it works, the more Mrs. Lee returns to buy more. The more she buys, the trickier becomes for May to procure more from her stealthy visits to the hospitals. Eventually, May has to move out when the police begin to investigate her. Mrs. Lee, now 2 months pregnant, despite being declared infertile earlier, is still desperate for rejuvenation and chooses to perform her own abortion, presumably to make it into dumplings. In Cut, directed by Chan Wook Park, a successful film director has to face a night of misery when a man who has appeared in 5 of his films as an extra captures both him and his wife to play a deadly game. The wife, a pianist, is gagged and trapped in a system of sharp wires at her piano. The director is instructed to strangle a young girl the extra met while on the way, or else the extra will chop off the wife's fingers one by one every 5 minutes. The extra reveals that he kidnapped the couple because he is jealous that the director is able to be rich and good man while he is poor and abusive to his wife and son. The director tries to buy time by telling stories of his infidelity though the extra continues to chop the wife's fingers off until only one remains on her left hand. The director ultimately decides to kill the young girl by strangling her. He tries but does not quite succeed in killing her. The young girl's wig comes off and is revealed to be a boy, the extra's son. The extra is only stopped when he slips on a ring the wife has been wearing before he chopped off her finger and on the blood pouring from her wife's, from the fingers. The wife then bites the extra's neck, pushing him into the wires that imprison her, leaving him bleeding to death. Traumatized and delusional, the director, now believing his wife to be the extra's son and vice versa, strangles her to death. In Box, directed by Takashi Miike, Kyoko, a 25-year-old novelist, frequently experiences nightmares of her past as a circus performer. Back when she was 10 years old, Kyoko worked in a circus with her twin sister, Shoko, and her father, Higata. Kyoko felt that Higata was favoring Shoko over her when he praised her after a performance. It is later revealed that Higata has been molesting Shoko. When Shoko was training, Kyoko forced and locked her into a box. However, Higata watched the incident and tried to rescue her, only for Kyoko to scar him in the face and then accidentally set the box in flames. Since then, Kyoko is haunted with guilt and wants to apologize to her sister. One day, Kyoko follows an invitation to her old circus, only to discover the box containing Shoko's burned remains. She's confronted by Higata, who is distraught after the incident and tells her that both Kyoko and Shoko are important to him, but only as one entity. After luring her into kissing him, he forces her into a plastic sack, fits her into a box, and then buries her in the nearby snowy ground. However, it is revealed that the entire event of the film is just another dream. So yeah, Sarah, was this your first time seeing Three Extremes?
It was. I hadn't heard of it until I looked into anthologies, like when you mentioned you were doing anthologies and I found a list of anthologies films. And I got really excited when I saw Miike and Park were directors. But I probably wouldn't have watched it if it weren't for this show. Mm-hmm. So thanks. Yeah. But yeah, I really, really liked it. I thought all three films were so different. And this one was one where there wasn't really like a unifying thread throughout, but none of them really felt out of place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree. I think like all the shorts worked really well together while also maintaining similar themes and aesthetics, even though like it doesn't necessarily seem that way on the surface. So yeah, this is my first time seeing Three Extremes. And I heard about it from Tales of the Uncanny documentary about horror anthologies. And yeah, I really liked it. I was really surprised. Because yeah, usually with some anthologies, there's like sometimes the dud of the bunch or like the short that doesn't like stick with you as much. But yeah, I found everyone, all of them to be like very haunting and disturbing but done really well.
Yeah, like they all stood well individually as shorts, but it was nice to have them, you know, in packaged together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So yeah, I've mentioned this kind of throughout this month, but anthology film is a subgenre of films consisting of several different short films, often tied together by only a single theme, premise, or brief interlocking event. So the past few weeks, we've covered Masaki Kobayashi's 1964 Japanese folk anthology, Koidan, the very bro-y VHS from 2012, Sarah and we talked about that, and the comic book style film Creepshow from 1982. And in my opinion, the interlocking event of Three Extremes seems to be father-related trauma. Do you agree?
Yeah, thinking about it, yeah, like male, like older male figures would be. So like maybe bros are coming back in a different way.
No.
No, I think, yeah, like all three of them have some aspect of male trauma, either like in the cut, you know, it's two men sort of squaring off about, you know, being a good man or not, and then in Dumplings it's, you know, the older husband straying for a younger woman, and then in the box it's the dad figure who is the one that's caused it. So yeah, I would say that for sure. It's not like, because in Dumplings, the husband is like, he's a major driving factor in the movie, but we don't really see that much of him.
Yeah, but then there's also the teenage girl who has been raped by her father, right?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it is interesting that like the male characters, and we'll get into it pretty soon, but it is interesting that the male characters in Dumplings are like tertiary, like they don't, they impact the plot, but they're not the focus of the story.
Yeah, they're like major driving factors for each of the female characters and for the overall plot. But like we never see the girl's dad.
Mm-hmm. Once he's dead, we do.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then,
but yeah, we don't see him really.
Yeah, good. And then we only see the woman's husband like a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. So I just have a quote from RogerEbert.com about Three Extremes. So the point is to push beyond the worn out devices of traditional horror films, to essentially abandon the supernatural and move into horror that has its expression in the dreads and traumas of nightmare. What all three of these stories share is the quality found in Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft, and Stephen King, an attention to horror as it emerges from everyday life as transformed by fear, fantasy, and depravity. Here is not a Joker in a Halloween mask scaring screaming teenagers, but adults whose needs and weaknesses turn on them with savage, relentless logic. So do you just want to cover each short at a time?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay. So yeah, let's start with Dumplings. And I feel like there's a lot to go over with this one. Yep. What did you think?
So gross. it was gross and like very uncomfortable at times, but not in like a horror gore sort of way. But like what I appreciate about that quote is how, you know, he talks about how it's just like a lot of everyday things. Mm-hmm. And that is what I think that I really appreciate about all three of these movies, is that none of it is like extraterrestrial or monster or whatever, but it's just like regular people doing, you know, for the most part, regular people things to varying degrees. Like, and the terribleness that sort of comes from that. Mm-hmm. I thought with Dumpling, I thought it was like very gross and very uncomfortable. But it was also like I found it kind of funny and kind of silly or absurd at times.
Yeah.
Which makes it even a little bit more uncomfortable. You know, when you're like watching this woman eat chopped up fetuses in dumplings, where you're like, but like you're watching and, you know, she's like slurping them up and there's like the sounds and everything. And you're just like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is absurd. What am I watching? It was like in The Witch, the scene with like the pulverized baby.
Yes. Yes.
It was like that, where I was like, wait, what's, oh my God, she's pulverizing the baby. Wait,
this is happening.
Yeah. That's what it was. It was like, oh okay. This is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think that like that's the kind of most absurd thing, and then there's like actually, you know, an abortion that happens, and you're just like, whoa, okay, like this is really real. And so like I really appreciate it in the fact that it like doesn't shy away from that, that it shows like, you know, pregnancy and not some like glowing light, that it shows what women have to go to a lot of times, like access, like, you know, like this is, I ultimately think that this is the dumpling scenario is like what every like right to lifer thinks what happens.
Yeah.
We'll have abortions. Like, I feel like they're like, they're going to eat that. Like, I'm sure that's happened.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, like I really appreciate how it like is gross and is like horror and all that, but it's gross and horror because it's so real and so visceral and so true. Like, you know, outside of the whole dumpling aspect of it, all of these things are things that could happen.
Like, totally. And I don't necessarily feel like there's like a judgment being made.
No, not at all.
On,
I didn't feel that,
these people seeking out abortions or the idea of abortion at all.
Yeah. Like there was no, even the woman like getting the dumplings because like she feels like, first off, she's like gorgeous and does not need any youthful anything.
Mm-hmm.
But like there's no judgment. It's just presented so matter-of-factly.
Yeah,
so like regular every day that I like really love it. And I was also thinking, I was like, man, you know, like if some beauty blogger somewhere, like, wasn't there something about like placenta facials and like, it would not be so, there would be some rich woman somewhere that would for sure eat somebody's fetus to if was told that it would make her look younger. Like, this is not that much of a stretch. And I think that's part of the thing that makes it uncomfortable, is that like, there's just this woman who's like making these things in her apartment, but it could very well be, you know, a thing that's like packaged in like super slick package and like marketed in some way that like it becomes the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I agree. It's like very visceral and uncomfortable at times, but I was very excited with this short. And I think because it has this like very non-judgmental lens. Pregnancy is used in horror quite a bit, but I think it's still very rare to show that such a common yet like taboo subject like abortion is portrayed in any film. So that's just like I just thought that was like very cool to see.
I totally think so too. And I also don't think that like a film like this would ever be made in this, like from Canada or the States.
Absolutely not.
Like,
no.
Immediately when I was watching it, I was like, oh, this could only have come, you know, as part of this package. Like there's no way that it would get made in the States.
Yeah, I don't think so at all. Yeah, it's very like, it's a complex representation because while it's portraying abortion and midwifery, it could also be described, like you said, as a pro-lifer's worst nightmare. And like, this could be one of those propaganda movies that they show clients at those fake abortion clinics.
Totally. Like, you know, at a crisis pregnancy center, oh they God. Like, you know, throw on dumpling and are like, this is what's going to happen to this your baby. What happens.
So brutal.
Terrible.
Yeah. And like you mentioned before, it has this, it does show these like sort of real parts of human life. And like, I think it also accurately shows what happens when abortion is illegal, that just because it is illegal, that doesn't get rid of the need to have abortions or any kind of reproductive care.
Yeah.
And we see this with the young teenage girl who goes to see Aunt May because she's been raped by her father and becomes pregnant. And like, the idea of the cursed child is like kind of complicated, but I think it's like an interesting concept in the film that this like, this pregnancy is the result of incest and therefore this embodiment of that trauma.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also that it's like more desirable, quote, apparently, mm-hmm. you know, like she keeps on trying to say like in that part where she's like, what's weird? Like, I have this weird smell now. Mm-hmm. What's with this baby that you gave me? Like mm-hmm. what, you know, kind of thing. And she's like, oh no, it's a boy baby. And it's this, and it's, you know, it means it's even better. And it's mm-hmm. like, is this just all kind of like the snake oil, you know, salesman's pitch, or is there something founded in that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I volunteer at the Women's Health Clinic as a birth control and pregnancy counselor. And one of the staff counselors there mm-hmm. actually recommended dumplings to me. And I just think it's like very cool because it just seemed like a non-judgmental sort of look at reproductive care. And like, this short isn't saying whether abortion is right or wrong or whatever. It's just that vulnerable people are at risk of harm without having accessible care, which I think is
And it shows like the ramifications of when you go to try and, you know, get an abortion that's provided in an unsanitary or not professional sort of mm-hmm. setting, you're, you know, maybe going to bleed to death on a train and, mm-hmm. you know, die in the street.
Yeah. And I didn't see that as like that girl being punished because she not had an abortion. At all. Yeah.
No, it was just like we've said a lot, it's just very matter of fact. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, this thing happened, then this thing happened, then this thing happened.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're all the, like, you know, it's all the result of, you know, A, B, C, and D, but there is never any judgment or anything placed on anybody in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the short deals with Mrs. Lee in an interesting way too. Like, it can be read that Mrs. Lee is so desperate to be youthful and desirable that she consumes her own child. But at the same time, it's so great to see such a contradictory and ambivalent character and a complex character.
Yeah.
And I understand like her desire to stay beautiful and want to keep her identity rather than stay pregnant. Like that makes sense to me. And also she seems to be in an unhappy marriage with her husband. So having a child would probably just be another strain on that relationship. So
totally. And she seems to have like fully, you know, because like she was told that she couldn't have kids. Mm-hmm. And then like it was something, I can't remember if it was to do with her or her husband. I thought mm-hmm. she said it was her husband, but she's just like, she's sort of claimed that is her identity, that like she's childless mm-hmm. and like that's fine. And so it's like she's living this life and she doesn't, you know, her new situation doesn't fit into how mm-hmm. she's her life going. And I too really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just another one of those things where, you know, there isn't a lot of you know, pregnancy and horror, and there isn't a lot of like people who are like, no, I don't, you know, I'm cool being childless, like in any genre in any film, ever.
Yeah.
It's always like, oh my god, it's such a blessing, like
it seems to be getting like, it seems to be changing a little bit, like with Swallow recently that came out, and Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I thought that they dealt with with abortion in a really interesting way.
Yes,
but yeah, and like, I mean, there's no right or wrong reason to terminate a pregnancy, and I feel like this movie covers that.
Yeah, and there's not exactly like it in, you know, like in a way this is, you know, both sides of the argument's wet dream of sorts, because it's like, you know, you could show the like abortion dumpling scene, and then you could also show like, hey, this woman's choosing for herself what she doesn't want to happen, and she's dealing with that.
Yeah. So that kind of goes into my next note, which is like, while I was researching this movie, I came across a few essays on how capitalism and the commodification of beauty is portrayed in the movie. So I have a quote here. The effect of these dumplings is clear. By consuming the flesh of these fetuses, the client receives youth and vigor beyond their years, a figurative fountain of youth. This black market can be extrapolated to represent the whole of the free market espoused by capitalism. Entrepreneurs have goods that people want to pay for, and the customers pay for them, thus perpetuating the system. What capitalism fails at, as displayed here in Dumplings, is in creating an equitable system for all to enjoy. Mrs. Lee is exactly the kind of insecure target me and capitalism seeks out. Rich, with a disposable income, willing to spend top dollar for whatever they can do to maintain their lavish lifestyles and superficial appearances. In short, May's dumplings are the natural ending point of the plastic surgery Botox phenomenon. Women will mutilate their bodies to look beautiful, but now they don't have to. They just have to mutilate others. I think this essay is a little judgmental.
Like mutilate others, but
It is interesting to think of like consumerism and like to consume these dumplings to.
Yeah, to put the like yourself. Capitalistic consumeristic. Mm-hmm. Spin on it. I just saw it more as like if I was going to take away that this was a critique of anything, that it would be a critique of the beauty industry, which I guess is like inherently capitalistic because it's very consumer based. But it's also just like, I think, you know, like this article or essay was talking about it from a specific point, but it does, you know, miss the like sociological and societal you know, requirements that are placed upon women. Like, you know, it overlooks the fact of like, why does she feel this? Oh, because her husband's not paying attention to her because he's, you know, having an affair with a woman who's much, much, much younger, because he's old. He's older than she is, and he's having an affair with a woman who's quite younger than she is. So it doesn't go into that. It's just, but it is also like, it's not wrong. Like Goop, like Gwyneth, like that all exists of like, let's spend hundreds of dollars on something, you know, called like moon potions and like, you know, stuff that's supposed to make you look younger, but like not like made up younger, that like from within, like supplements and all of this stuff that is like such an industry with like, you know, like, yeah, okay, there's like all of the cosmetic surgery and things that you do, but then there's also the things that you like ingest and like wellness, and like you can't eat bad foods. You know, like food isn't good or bad. Food has no value. We place that value upon food because of the guilt that we're made to feel that like, oh, I ate a McDonald's cheeseburger, it's bad. If I was to have made a grass-fed cheeseburger at home with like, you know, vegan whatever, it would be okay.
Yeah, so it's all tied into classism and racism too.
Totally.
Wellness and food.
Yeah, industry. The whole wellness industry.
Yeah. Totally. It is interesting to think of dumplings in terms of class too, because if you think of like Mrs. Lee, like the sort of things that she has access to compared to the teenage girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's literally spending the money that her husband's giving her for like their stuff in their new house, like on this woman's fetus.
说不过是面皮里的一团肉，有什么特别？ 李太，我这面粉啊是高筋的，软硬适度带韧劲儿，这得揉得够，揉得仔细，一直揉到这面团的表面啊，跟波克的鸡蛋那样，又光滑又透，又柔软。包好的饺子啊，下锅不漏馅儿，有秘诀。原汁原味儿，吃进嘴里啊，一包鲜汁儿，好香，趁热吃。我自己啊是常吃的，好滋补。有时炖汤，有时候啊，抓成肉饼，加点陈皮来蒸。李太。吃的时候想后果，不要想前因。
Shall we move on to the next short?
We shall.
Okay, so the next one is Cut. What did you think about this one?
Having seen a lot of Park Chan-wook's work, I wasn't sure what to expect from this one. I figured it would be beautiful and there would probably be like torture or something very uncomfortable. And it has both of those things. Yeah. So
great.
I wasn't too let down. Mm-hmm. I really liked this one, even though I felt like it was the most sort of straightforward, for the most part, one of all three. Mm-hmm. All the reviews that I read said that this was the weakest, but I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I loved the elaborateness of it all. And I totally, like, you're going to talk a little bit about see Italian horror in it. Mm-hmm. I love that in like 30-ish minutes, he's got us thinking about like wealth inequality and good versus bad. But like, also being bloody and gruesome. Mm-hmm. I loved the torture setup with the piano wire. Like, that was art.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
So creative. It reminds me, there's this photographer that I really like, whose name is Joel Peter Witkin. And he makes these like very macabre, like he has this really famous picture that's called The Kiss, and somebody mailed him a head of an old man. And he cut it in half and like made the two halves kiss. And it sounds really like,
yeah, how was that ethical?
I don't, yeah, like there's a lot of stuff. Like he went to Mexico and in Mexico, I guess there's certain parts where they go around and pick up dead bodies.
Okay.
And he has this one picture of this man who had died, who he like, it looks like Jesus. Like, it's crazy. And he talks about, like, he thinks that he saw the point at which the man's, like, this man had been dead for a while. He thinks that at one point he saw the point at which the man's soul left his body. And like, he talks about that. And so he manages to capture these like very like macabre and disturbing images, but in like very, very beautiful ways. Like, he manipulates the negatives and it looks very like a Bosch painting almost. Like, it's very elaborate, everything. Mm-hmm. And it's just really cool. So like that scene, I just imagine being like one of his pictures, and it's like, most of them, they're black and white. So like that obviously makes things easier to look at because you're not like, ooh, there's blood.
Yeah.
So I just imagined it like that. Like, it's just, it's very cool. I'll text you some of his photos. They're amazing. But yeah, so I really loved that setup, and it just, like, the grandiose scale of it matched the set / house. And her, like, just how she was made up, she looked like a Marie Antoinette, like, being taken to the gallows kind of thing. Like, yes, she looked like a royal. And it was just very, very interesting juxtaposition to the to the guy who broke in and was like, I'm a terrible man. I'm gonna make you kill, you know, chop off your wife's fingers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I totally see the Italian horror and giallo elements of it. So just a little definition here. Giallo films are generally characterized as gruesome murder mystery thrillers that combine the suspense elements of detective fiction with scenes of shocking horror featuring excessive bloodletting, stylish camera work, and often jarring musical arrangements. Also, bright colors are another element of that. So have you ever seen Dario Argento's opera?
Which one is that? Is that the one with, like,
the pins in the eyes?
Yes.
This one really reminded me of that. And, like, so we have lots of bright colors, lots of blood, very fast, frenetic, sort of emotional and psychological camera work.
Yeah.
And surreal sequences that are kind of, like, very silly.
Yeah.
And like you said, the elaborate setup. Also, like a lot of giallo movies, the ending doesn't make sense, but that doesn't really matter.
Yeah. It just, yeah, I like this one because it did seem kind of absurd at times. I just love when, like, couples go off on each other. Like, when he's just like, you're younger than me and you are, like, so concerned with, like, Botox and all of this, you know, all of this stuff. And, like, I've been sleeping with this woman and blah, 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 and all this stuff. Like, just go off on, like, when they just say the things that you can, like, never take back.
Right. Yes. Just, like, saying horrible things to each other.
Yeah. Just, like, being really, really terrible people, which I also, like, appreciate because, like, we all have that in us, I think. Like, we all have that ability. It's just, like, that we know that, like, you don't do that to somebody that you love. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you might think that, like, while you're watching your partner chew, you want them to die because you keep chewing or something, but, like, you're not going to say that.
Yeah.
You might be like, oh, I'm just going to go eat over here or something. Mm-hmm. But, like, you're not going to do that. But in these, like, just most extreme situations of, like, oh, you're being presented with this very difficult choice and this man who's saying that he's such a terrible man, that you're such a good man, but, like, you're trying to prove that you're not such a good man, but because maybe that will make him not make you make that decision. You know, like, maybe you won't, if you can convince him that you're not a good guy, that you won't have to, you know, either strangle a girl or, you know, allow him to chop off your pianist wife's fingers. I just thought it was, I liked it. And it did, like, there was times where I was just kind of like, okay, this is a bit extra, but I did, like, kind of like it a lot because of that.
Yeah. I think this sort of, like, over the topness, campiness, weirdness really lends itself, if you think of it as being like a South Korean giallo movie.
Yeah.
And, like,
and it's also, like, in keeping with a lot of his work too. Like, it's always really, like, beautiful. And there's usually some kind of, like, talk about, like, class structure or, you know, something.
I'm not super familiar with his movies. I've only seen half of Old Boy. I'm a bad movie person.
It's fine.
I need to, like, rewatch and rethink about it, but I don't know.
Yeah, but it also could be, like, you don't have to like it. You could just be like, this is one of these ones. I gave it a shot.
Yeah.
I think he did... he was one of the people who did Snowpiercer, and that one is the one that, like,
You have feelings about Snowpiercer, don't you?
I mean, like, it's beautiful and every, like, it's got a great cast, and I love the overall, like, you know, the theme and the message of it. And, like, it is very possible that in, you know, however many years the earth is dead and we're in a train that delineates what class we are. But the ending, I just, Chris Evans talking about eating babies. Oh, here's another baby.
Oh, yeah.
he's just like, oh, the babies were so tasty. And I was just like, are you kidding me? I just lost it. And I was like, can't.
Yeah, I need to rewatch it, but I think you're right.
I just, like, I mean, it was super cool. I was like, this is like, you know, it's one of those things where, again, it's like so unbelievable, but also you're like, maybe in some mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. But then it just got to, you know, like the end, and the ending of a movie is so important. Like, it can be a very like stupid movie throughout, and the ending, if you are like wowed in the end, you're like, wow, okay, great, that wasn't so bad. Because we have, like, you know, goldfish memories where it's like, mm-hmm. I don't remember the last, you know, 2 hours, but the last 10 minutes were great. And the babies, I just Chris Evans, I like, he's my favorite Chris, but like Chris Evans talking about being so guilty about eating babies, I just was like, this is stupid. This yeah. is it.
Who cares?
Done. You lost me. Who cares? Yeah,
it was a long drawn out ending. Anyway, back to Peck.
Yeah.
So I feel like this short deals with the uncanny in a really cool way. Mm-hmm. So the uncanny is the psychological experience of something that is strangely familiar rather than simply mysterious. It may describe incidents where a familiar thing or event is encountered in unsettling, eerie, or taboo context. So I feel like this is presented in the director's house. So he's initially, we see him walk into his very lavish house, which the extra makes a point of saying that it's very rare for houses in South Korea to look like this, because it looks like a European castle. Like, it looks yeah, French. It has,
like, columns and everything.
Columns and, like, yeah, it looks very, it looks like a French castle or something. But
yeah.
So there's that. And then the actual like setup with the piano wires and everything, and the actual terror is happening on a film set that looks exactly like the director's house, which is like such a cool,
it's so cool,
so such a cool concept, and has have that like uncanny, unsettling element to it.
Yeah, it's super cool. I really appreciated that. And also just it like added to like the theater and the spectacle of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Because I think that it just like, you know, because when he is like, he's attached to that like rubber, that like bungee cord basically, mm-hmm. and he like breaks through the wall, and it's like almost like, well, where is he going to end up? And he's like, you know, he's just still on a soundstage and sees mm-hmm. that it's like, you know, wound around, you know, pipes and mm-hmm. and everything. So it just like creates this weird, you know, like diorama aspect of it, mm-hmm. almost, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. We could just talk about the ending briefly.
Oh yeah.
So at the end, the director has like a psychological break or whatever, and then attacks his wife while screaming at the child that's sitting on the couch. I'm not sure if you're supposed to think that he is confusing the two, or if there never even was an extra and he sort of set up this yeah. like, elaborate thing. That's kind of how I read it, but yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know. I think maybe just excuse me, that he like, because he killed the kid who he thought was like a girl, but it turns out
he tried to, but he didn't
try to.
Yeah, and then the child survives.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, he tried to, in like, you know, by strangling, which I'm always just like, oh, he, you know, it's such an intimate
mm-hmm.
mode,
very violent,
death.
Yeah,
and then the little boy was like, I'm gonna get you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe he just was like, you know, he had a snap and he had a break. I think that he likely did then just, I think that it was that he just like had this experience and this break and killed his wife.
Yeah. That's the only part I could have done without, because it does seem kind of like makes it extra silly, but
I guess maybe like if, because then I don't know if we like, if he hadn't have done that, what are we then left with? Like, he has to like take care of her, like, what, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I would have a lot of questions maybe at the end, because she has only one finger left,
mm-hmm.
and she's a pianist, and they've said these things to each other, but even though he's like, I'm so, you know, they had like a little bit of a moment of something, like of reconciliation or of whatever, but like mm-hmm. I feel like it would have maybe left things open. I'm not sure. Mm. But I also don't know if I'm like that invested that I would have been like, well, what's next for them? Like, you know what I mean? Like, I would have been like, okay, next, it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, and like Dumplings, this short deals with trauma and fathers. So here we have violence passed down from father to son. Where so we have the extra, mm-hmm. who is an abusive father and husband, and then is inflicting this violence on his family, and then the child is like turns around and is like, "Oh, I'll get you. I'll get my revenge."
Interesting. Why would he want? It's so strange that to me that he would want revenge on.
Because that guy tried to kill him.
Well, yeah, but I feel like he wanted revenge on him because, like, he killed his dad.
Yeah. Oh, and then that like, leads into, like, kind of, like, child logic. That kind of leads into the next short. What do you think of Box?
Box, I like this one, but I think it was my least favorite of the three, but I'm also not totally sure. it was so beautiful and so visceral. And, you know, like you, I got sort of a Twin Peaks vibe from it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel as invested in it or the characters as the others. Mm-hmm. And the ending was a big... mm-hmm. for me, but it still also played into the dreaminess of it, and it's the one that I was still thinking about afterwards. Mm-hmm. Again, with this one, I wasn't sure what to expect because I've seen a few Miike movies, and they're always so vibrant and so weird and so gory, mm-hmm. and so sexual.
Yeah.
Ishii the Killer and
Audition
mm-hmm. and what is the one with the nine in the title? Oh, I can't remember. Anyways, they're just like, there's always some weird sex thing, and it's like they're amazing and they're super cool, but I was like, it was very different for mm-hmm. me from like the other movies that he'd done. Mm-hmm. Like I was very surprised at how dreamlike and muted, but like emotionally muted, not like mm-hmm. you know, not the scenes were muted or anything, because it was still very vibrant, but it was still like it very much reflected what I think the main character, like herself. But yeah, I liked it. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I did really like the sort of the distinction between waking life and then the sort of dream and memory life, and then how they slowly sort of like,
yeah,
how they interact with each other and sort of seep into each other. So her waking life is very, very quiet, very, very quiet, lots of muted colors. It reminded me of Suspiria from 2018. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of blue in it, which I think is like color is a really interesting sort of like indicator and signifier in this one.
Yeah.
And then her dream and memory life is, it's very musical. There's a lot of saturated colors, like you said, like reminded me of Twin Peaks. It's very Lynchian, and it uses a lot of red.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also deals with trauma and fathers.
Yeah. What would having a dad be without trauma?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, dad trauma,
Everybody's got it. Yeah. I thought an interesting part of this movie was the use of the doppelganger and how Kyoko's publisher, Yoshi, and her father are played by the same actor.
Yes.
Which plays into this sort of like uncanny doppelganger territory. So a doppelganger is a biologically unrelated lookalike or a double of a living person. In fiction and mythology, a doppelganger is often portrayed as a ghostly or paranormal phenomenon and usually seen as a harbinger of bad luck. Other traditions and stories equate a doppelganger with an evil twin. So here we have almost like two sets of twins. So we have Kyoko and Shoku, and then we have Yoshi and Hagata, this sort of pedophile dad.
Yeah, that was a thing that I was like, you know, it was like suggested but not implicit. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like they're sleeping together and he's got his like arm around her, so automatically, I mean, like, what does that say about us? But like also like immediately I'm like, oh no, that's
because I didn't initially realize that was their father. I thought it was just like their guardian.
I wasn't sure about that either. I was just like, oh, it's like a man in their life who seems to be like their caretaker or like mm-hmm. their trainer or something, because they doesn't seem like they have like much of a family other than just like the two of them. And then mm-hmm. I was like, oh, okay, so I guess he's like their dad. Mm-hmm. I think this one was like the most challenging to like to watch and to follow, mm-hmm. because like in cut, when he has that like break with reality, it's very obvious, like mm-hmm. the frantic and frenetic like camera work makes it very obvious. But with this, it's sort of like starts off where she's like, I keep having this dream, and then it's like it's happening, and I was like, wait, is this like, is she actually getting put into a plastic bag? Like, mm-hmm. is this like, what is happening here? And like there, and because of the nature that it, because it is, you know, horror, it could very well be that like, you know, there's that little part where like the box opens and like, you see the like red scarred
Shoko. Yeah.
Yeah. The like her sister sort of just like peek out with just like one eye. You're like, oh, this could for sure be happening. And we could mm-hmm. be doing this thing.
Yeah.
But it just like never really, is very, very obvious, which I both appreciate, and like also I'm like, ugh, like, you know, as a viewer sometimes you're like, just make it easy.
Yeah,
but
you know, I think it does an interesting job of sort of like using dream logic to tell this story, even though it is like can be quite confusing. But it's just like dreams are sort of like filtering in and out of this story. So dream logic is the nonsensical logic one possesses while dreaming that makes perfect sense until they wake up. Which, mm-hmm. I liked it. You just kind of have to like go along for the ride with this short without, I feel like we're doing this right now, but if we like analyze it too much, then it's going to lose any sort of like effect.
It loses its like magic in a way.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones that's like, you know, I don't know about you, but like lately when I've been watching things, it's like, I'll put something on and then I'll immediately like be looking at my phone. Whatever, and you can't do that with this. Mm-hmm. Like, besides the fact that it's like, you know, subtitles and stuff, you just mm-hmm. can't, like, you have to pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. It's just one of those things where I'm like, oh wait, what happened? Or mm-hmm. are we dreaming or are we awake?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have questions about the sort of last shot and the sort of like so-called like conclusion of this one. So I have a quote from on the fringes of cinema.com. The majority of the visuals displayed throughout the convoluted narrative transversing between the real, the memory, and the imagined hold an uncanny resemblance to one another and eventually begin to piece together. That is, however, until the penultimate sequence in Kyoko's bedroom. Without giving the game away, an explanation of the central character's entrapping perceptions become unfounded through one minimal adjustment of the camera. On reflection, certain words, images, and displays of emotion hold many contradictory meanings. Firstly, and most intriguing, are all the visions we observe exclusive to the psyche of the central character? And secondly, is Kyoko crestfallen as a consequence of her non-viable relationship with another lover? This would explain the central character's abnormal sexual desires for Hagata. Combined with Miike's daring utilization of slow-moving and somber cinematography, sporadic retraction of sound, and fleeting moments of dialogue, this hushed psychological terror will briefly trap you inside a harrowing world of jealousy, remorse, paraphilia, and vengeance. So at the end of the short, Kyoko and Shoko are shown as conjoined twins. But from my side, Kyoko is a grown woman and Shoko is still a child. So yeah, I just wanted to know like what do you think of the conjoined twin theory, and do you see that as the reality, or do you see that as, I kind of see it as her like extension of her guilt.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that like when I, you know, when we first started talking about this one, I was like, yeah, the ending, what? Mm-hmm. I at first was like, this doesn't make any sense. It's like, how can she be a grown woman and mm-hmm. her conjoined twin be still like a child? Mm-hmm. And I think it was jarring because it was like the most, like we had spent so much time in and out of like dream and reality. And then this seemed to be the most like realistic thing mm-hmm. that happened, but it was in a way the most unrealistic. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it is, like you said, like her grief and that she's carrying it around. It also to me sort of talks, like speaks to her living partially in reality and sort of partially in a dream world mm-hmm. where like that is like her like appendage is of her sister is the dream world that she mm-hmm. always is sort of like half in and half out of mm-hmm. or that is more realistic to her than normal dreams would be. Mm-hmm. It is like, you know, of like, yeah, it is sort of not the living embodiment, because I don't think that she's actually a conjoined twin, mm-hmm. but it is the thing that is her guilt, that is her, like the burden that she mm-hmm. carries around with herself because of what she feels, because of her actions, because of an accident. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. And I feel like the reason that it feels like we're looking at a real image is because it's not filmed like a dream, like the rest of the sequences are. Like it's filmed in a very matter of fact sort of way.
Yeah. And that was something that like at first I found sort of like clunky about it, where I was mm. like, this is like, why are you doing this? But then maybe like, just, you know, talking about this now, it is like, obviously it was purposeful, but like mm. maybe it's because like it is the most real thing to her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that these, like that this thing is the, that this like her young sister and the guilt that she has a result of what happened is the most real thing to her. So like that would be the most real thing that we could see.
Yeah, that's very insightful. That's a great point.
Thanks.
Nee-chan desu.
I mean, I would go back and watch them all again, mm-hmm. but like, I would go back and watch Dumpling just to like, you know, be grossed out. And then also to like, you know, laugh at certain things and maybe to take a little bit more away from it. I would go back and watch Cut again, just to see, you know, again, to like, maybe there was things that I missed or something, but with this one, I would like really, you know, I would go back mm-hmm. and like, it would be something that I would like really watch again and be like, okay, and mm-hmm. see what kind of meaning and what kind of feeling I had after watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they all just do such a great job. Like they're all maybe 20 mm-hmm. to 30 minutes each, but they all, every short like contains so much and is able to tell these like very complex stories without feeling unfinished.
Yes, very much so. Like mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, when we had watched VHS, I was like, I literally don't care about any of these characters. And they're just like, they can
die. Yeah.
In like, the worst ways. But like with these people, like with the people who do die in terrible ways, I'm like, oh no. Like,
yeah.
I felt invested. I felt like we got to have like, you know, we got to, they tackled really complex and taboo and difficult subjects mm-hmm. in a really interesting and like different way that I just appreciate so much.
I really enjoyed it. Watch Three Extremes, everybody. Yeah, so that's our show this week. Thanks again, Sarah, for watching this movie with me and for talking to me about it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, where can people find you and all your things?
The Gram, Feminist Fonts, my personal, but it's like very boring because who does anything now? but yeah, Sarah Anikov. That's where I'm at. The internet.
Great. And you can find Bikini Drive-In on Instagram, on Twitter. We have a Facebook page as well. And you can listen to Bikini Drive-In every Sunday at 4 p.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM or wherever you find podcasts. Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
By volunteer community involvement, this is CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.